75. They sat together in the time when the sun was dying and bleeding on the clouds. They sat together on a karos of monkey skin in a thicket of wild ebony, at the head of one of the draws that wrinkled down into the valley of the Rufiji. They sat in silence. Rosa bent forward over her needlework as she stitched a concealed pocket in the filthy cloak of leather that lay across her lap. The pocket would hold a cigar box. Sebastian watched her, and his eyes upon her were a caress. She pulled the last stitch tight, knotted it, and then leaned forward to bite the thread. "There," she said, "it's finished," and looked up into his eyes. "Thank you," said Sebastian. They sat together quietly, and Rosa reached out to touch his shoulder. The muscle under the black-stained skin was rubbed hard and warm. "Come," she said, and drew his head down to her, so that their cheeks touched, and they held each other while the last light faded. The African dusk thickened the shadows in the wild ebony, and down the draw a jackal yipped plaintively. "Are you ready?" Flynn stood near them, a dark, bulky figure with Mohammed beside him. "Yes," Sebastian looked up at him.
"Kiss me," whispered Rosa, "and come back safely."
Gently Sebastian broke from her embrace. He stood tall above her and draped the cloak over his naked body. The cigar box hung heavily between his shoulder blades. "Wait for me," he said, and walked away. Flynn Patrick O'Flynn moved restlessly under his single blanket and belched. Heartburn moved acid sour in his throat, and he was cold. The earth under him had long since lost the warmth it had sucked from yesterday's sun. A small slice of the old moon gave a little silver light to the night. Unsleeping, he lay and listened to the soft sound of Rosa sleeping next to him. The sound irritated him. He lacked only an excuse to waken her and make her talk to him. Instead, he reached into the haversack that served as his pillow, and his fingers closed round the cold, smooth glass of the bottle. A nightbird hooted softly down the draw, and Flynn released the bottle and sat up quickly. He placed two fingers between his lips and repeated the nightbird's cry. Minutes later, Mohammed drifted like a small black ghost into camp and came to squat beside Flynn's bed.
"I see you, Finny."
"You I see also, Mohammed."
"It went well?"
"It went well."
"Manali has entered the camp of the Almond.
He sleeps now beside the man who is my cousin, and in the dawn they will go down the Rufiji to the big boat of the Almond once again."
"Good," grunted Flynn. "You have done well."
Mohammed coughed softly to signify that there was more to tell.
"What is it?" Flynn demanded.
"When I had seen Manali safely into the care of my cousin, I came back along the valley and..."
He hesitated. "Perhaps it is not fitting to speak of such matters at a time when our lord Manali goes unarmed and alone into the camp of the Almond."
"Speak," said Flynn.
"As I walked without sound, I came to a place where this valley falls down to the little river called Abati."
"You know the place?"
"Yes, about a mile down the draw from here."
"That is the place."
Mohammed nodded.
"It was here that I saw something move in the night. It was as though a mountain walked."
A sliver of ice was thrust down Flynn's spine, and his breathing snagged painfully in his throat.
"Yes," he breathed. "It was a mountain, armed with teeth of ivory, that grew from its face to touch the ground as it walked."
"Plow the earth."
Flynn whispered the name, and his hand fell onto the rifle that lay loaded beside his bed.
"It was that one." Mohammed nodded again. He feeds quietly, moving towards the Rufiji. But the voice of a rifle would carry down the ears of the Almond.
"I won't fire," whispered Flynn. "I just want to have a look at him. I just want to see him again."
And the hand on the rifle shook like that of a man in high fever.